Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. What a great summer week this has been so far. The weather is beautiful and just love it. So this week I'm in North Carolina. I spend my time half between Massachusetts and North Carolina. And I'm really blessed to be able to do so. And the people here are amazing. It is great to be near the ocean in both places. The ocean is very different down here than it is up north in Massachusetts, but I just love it. I love being near the ocean. My birthday just passed, so I'm a Cancer. If you follow the astral signs, and that means that I am a water sign, so I love the water. But I'm also a homey person. I love to be in my home and a caregiver. And so for me, I just nest, you know, I just love to nest. We recently adopted a dog, a little chihuahua. We renamed her Trixie because we don't know what her name was originally. They had given her a different name in foster care, but basically said, you know, can name her because she doesn't really know what her name was, or we don't know what her name was. So we named her Trixie because she was very tricky and would escape between our legs and run away. Trixie came from a tough situation. She came to us with a broken leg, and they thought that her leg had been repaired, but she wasn't using it, and it had been 5 months since her leg had been repaired when we got her in June, about 4 weeks ago, and she was still not using it, wasn't stepping down on it, so something was really wrong. So we did take her to her first vet appointment, and then they took x-rays and the leg was still broken. Pretty much a mess. So we took her to see an orthopedic surgeon and found out that unfortunately the pin was not in the right place and the leg was still broken. And so she's in surgery today. I'm crying my eyes out, although it's been, you know, beautiful down here in so many other ways. My poor baby, my new poor baby, she's going to have her leg amputated today. So say prayers for Trixie. She's going to be a little three-legged dog, but we know that she's going to be much better off because she hasn't been able to get around really well with that leg. And it's been causing her a lot of pain and discomfort. So in the long run, it's going to be better for her. And we're very excited to see how she gets around now that she doesn't have the pain and the pin that's in the wrong place. And anyway, it's a long, hard story to tell. But at least, you know, once that heals, she'll be running around like nobody's business, because it's unbelievable how she's been getting around with a broken leg and the pain that she must be in. What an incredibly resilient little dog, let me tell you. And it just reminds me of the resilience that I see every day in my practice. You know, the families that we work with, the people with their both disabilities and abilities, the illnesses, the treatment plans, the adversity that they face in these crazy systems that we have to deal with, the resilience, it just blows my mind. You know, I am just so privileged to be able to walk alongside so many of you. And Trixie just reminded me of that this week. She's a plucky little dog, and she just takes every day with such gusto, you know. thanks, Trixie, for reminding me of all of this. I will keep you updated on Trixie's progress and send along a picture so that you all can see her. She's very cute little Chihuahua dog. Bailey, our other dog, not so sure about why we brought this dog home with us. She has been a good big sister, tolerant big sister, but kind of given us the hairy eyeball about like, when is this one going home, you know? So anyway, today I'm going to get Mark Worthington, my husband and law partner, if you didn't know, invited into this meeting so that we can talk to you about something really important. We are going to be talking about a topic that I've been getting a lot of questions about, and that is, what does it mean to fund your estate plan? And these questions have come to us in so many forms. Funding your estate plan is, you know, it seems to be a mystery to a lot of people. And many people will get these beautiful looking documents in this pretty binder, but they will think that they're done and not understand how to connect those documents, those pieces of paper, to the actual goals of their plan. So I want to make sure that you get that next step of your plan done. And we're going to talk about that today. So here we go. Hey, welcome, Mark. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
It sounds so funny because you're just in the other room.
Oh, I am? Oh, yes, of course I am.
Okay, podcast fans, as we were talking about in the intro, funding your plan is something that really evades a lot of people. Mark, as you may remember, we had two webinar series this early spring and then later spring into summer. The first one in March was about estate planning. And we did estate planning and transition planning and some interesting topics. And then during May, we just talked about trust administration. And both times, some really interesting questions came up about funding your plan. And they come in all different forms. But it seems to be that between those questions and the types of questions that we constantly and chronically get in our practice, this is an area of confusion for many, many people. And I thought it would be good to do a podcast on what it means to fully fund your plan. And so let's just lead off with that question. So Mark, what does it mean to have a fully funded plan? What is funding your plan really all about? Why don't we start with the basics?
Sure. So the expression originally originated with the idea of, quote, funding a trust, and a trust may or may not be a part of a person's estate plan. The idea about funding a trust, oh, I have to put something in it, you know, and that's kind of the idea of, you know, people kind of, I think, sometimes have the idea of the trust is a bucket and you need to put stuff in it, you know, money, right, real estate or something like that. So, but what I look at really is, quote, funding your estate plan, not funding your trust. You may or may not have a trust, but you have an estate plan, even if you've never seen a lawyer, even if you've never gone to, you know, NOLO.com or anything, because the legislature, of course, has an estate plan for you. If you don't, that's called dying intestate. That means dying without a will. Or you have an estate plan because you have death beneficiary designations and so on. But what I look, the way that I like to look at it is this. Your estate plan starts in your mind about how you want things to happen if you become incapacitated or when, not if, you died. How do you want things to go? Those ideas may be somewhat vague. They may be a little inconsistent. Deal with a good estate planning attorney. They help straighten that kind of stuff out. Well, that idea is really your estate plan. And then what you do is, or the attorney does, is they reduce that to writing. So you have a bunch of documents that you sign, and there's your estate plan in writing. But if I hold up your estate plan, say, you know, in my left hand, and all the stuff you have, you know, your investment accounts or real estate, or, you know, the snow globe out over in the corner over there you got when you visited Niagara Falls 50 years ago, you know, all that stuff. And you look and say, hey, you know, there's nothing connecting them. There's no, what's connecting them? Nothing. Well, funding your estate plan is connecting them. And the basic forms of connecting them are either ownership, like ownership by a trust, or ownership by you individually. And if that's all it is, that's going to be a probate asset if you die. Owning it jointly with somebody else, joint right of survivorship, all these different kinds of things. The other thing is that some assets are what we call, quote, contract assets. The most prevalent of those are life insurance and retirement plans like IRAs and 401ks and so forth. Those pass by death beneficiary designation. And so how you arrange death beneficiary designations and how you arrange ownership of assets is funding your estate plan. Sometimes if you kind of neglect that, things may work out anyway, just not as smoothly or as well. And sometimes they don't. People have old death beneficiary designations on life insurance that they don't want it that way anymore, or retirement plans. And things end up going at death to people or in ways that you really didn't want. So that's what funding an estate plan is about. I do have one comment about that occurred to me, if you don't mind, about funding trust. People, funding a trust, how do I get my bank account into the trust? Well, remember, a trust is just another person under the law. Even a revocable trust, which is barely another person under the law, is, for these purposes, another person under the law. Well, if I wanted to get my real estate over to another person, what would I do? I'd deed it to that other person, or more likely to the trustee of that trust, which may be you. Anyway, the person who's trusted is, or if it's a bank account, how do you get a bank account opened up for another person? Well, you go in and somebody signs the signature cards and all this kind of stuff. Well, who's that? Well, the trustee. And if it's a revocable trust, that's probably you. All right. So that's the basic question. Okay. I bet you've got some follow-ups.
Mark, that's a lot of stuff to unpack. So let's kind of take that, you know, one by one by one. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you've said that, you know, we're looking at a set of documents and a group of stuff, and we're figuring out how to, you know, sort of tether that stuff to the documents. And you, and listening to you, it sounds like your plan is really a set of goals, and you want to make sure that your goals get, you know, effectuated, or really that, you know, the goals get accomplished when it's time for those goals to get accomplished, which is sometimes when you're incapacitated or when you die. And so in order to make that happen, you have to use certain tools to change the ownership, essentially, when the time comes on the assets or on the stuff. Okay, so let's kind of talk about how that happens, mm-hmm. one by one, because you talked about a lot of different stuff. You talked about contract assets, and you talked about things, and you talked about trust, and I want to just kind of like back up little by little. Okay. So let's talk about when you first go to an attorney and you sign your documents, you sign, you have a nice plan. You tell the attorney all the things that you want in your plan. And you kind of think, well, I'm done, right? I've got this beautiful plan and I've said all the things that I want to happen in my will. And maybe I even have some trusts. Aren't I finished now? Like most people do kind of think that they're done. Why isn't my stuff already connected to what's happening in those documents?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon.
Well, for example, let's say that your will says, I want everything to, let's take an example of a single individual. I want everything to go to my my three kids equally. And you've got an IRA and it says everything goes to, you know, whoever, the name of the oldest child.
Okay, so an IRA is just a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. Something that a lot of people have either through their job or after they leave their job, it turns into a different kind of a retirement vehicle.
Well, so the will, I see this a lot where somebody says, well, my will says it goes to my three kids equally. Mm-hmm. And a life insurance policy or an IRA or 401k says something different. That contract asset, the death beneficiary designation on that contract asset controls. And it bypasses the will altogether. It doesn't matter what the will says.
Okay, so the retirement asset is a contract asset.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It has its own language that says what happens to it when the original owner dies. Yes. It's not controlled by what it says in your will.
Nope, nor is it controlled by what it says in your trust.
Okay.
Unless you name the trust as the death beneficiary, that's a different story.
Okay. So you have to take further steps after you finish drafting your documents to look at the ownership and the death beneficiary designations to make sure that those contract assets are going to the right place.
Yes.
So I know in our practice, we've had a lot of discussions about this where when we start doing an inventory with people about their assets and they're looking at life insurance policies, for example, they're like, oh, I had no idea that my mother or my great aunt still the beneficiary of this life insurance policy because I've had this since I was a young person before I got married.
Right.
Yeah. So when you're doing your estate planning, this is a perfect time to do an inventory of your assets to figure out, okay, are these aligned with the plans that I just put in place in my documents? So sometimes you're changing the actual ownership too.
Yes.
So you might look at your savings account, for example, and it might be proper for a trust to actually own that account. So instead of Annette Hines owning that savings account, maybe my Annette Hines trust needs to own that savings account. Who would be the best person to talk you through the ownership of that account. Would it be your estate planning attorney? Would it be your accountant? Would it be your financial advisor? Who is the professional that you should be talking to about these choices?
Sure. Well, in terms of who of ownership and death beneficiary designations, to me, there's no question. And, you know, I mean, this may sound self-serving, but it's not, because it's actually, if I didn't have to do this, it would pay great. One less thing I have to do for the client. But it really needs to be the estate planning attorney. And it needs to be thoughtful. It needs to be more than just a, you know, one size fits all sort of set of instructions. But implementing is another matter. Now, some estate planners don't really do much at all in the way of advising clients about, you know, funding their estate plan. I think that it's important to not do that. An estate planner should let a client know what needs to be done. We do that in writing in our practice. Mm-hmm. There are other factors that can come into play that can complicate some of the issues. There's factors that need to be analyzed sometimes, and preferences that clients may have about certain things, or their predictions about what may happen in the next 5 years about certain aspects of their lives. In terms of implementation, if they have a financial advisor, which is almost always a good thing, financial advisor can be a great deal of help in implementing this with investment assets and so forth. If bank accounts, generally, you know, you're going to need to go to the bank and follow the instructions that we give. Real estate, if it's Massachusetts, since we're a Massachusetts law firm, we handle that. If it's out of state real estate, we always get out of state counsel to make sure that it's done right. Some firms will do all of the funding themselves in-house, fill out the forms and everything. The one thing they can't do is sign the client's name to them. So they'll do a lot of that themselves. Not many firms do that. Some do. And it's just kind of a, what is the firm decided to do? What's their style? What's their philosophy and so forth? Right. But either be very explicit with written directions about exactly what to do with what kinds of assets, customized for that client, because different assets are, there can be, you know, restricted stock, there can be real estate that's got some unusual features to it, that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And or other things. I mean, second marriages can influence our funding decisions and recommendations a great deal. Mm-hmm. All right, I think I've tried to answer your question, even though it's usual I'm long-winded.
Let's dig into the disability piece of the plan, which is what our audience really wants to hear about.
Okay, good.
Because there are some key aspects of doing a disability plan or a special needs plan. And, you know, our audience does have very specific language preferences. And that is where you're looking at things like the Secure Act and retirement mm-hmm. plans, where mm-hmm. it can be beneficial sometimes to think about leaving a specific asset to a specific person, because we can get a tax benefit. So let's talk about that for a minute. And then there are certain wishes. Sometimes we want to leave a home
yep.
to a disabled person, because we want them to live in the home. We mm-hmm. want them to have that home in the special needs trust, for example. Yes. And so there can be a very specific, goal
yes.
in the plan. And you have to make sure that the funding is appropriate and gets done to your wishes. You can't mm-hmm. leave that to chance. You have to make sure that that gets done at the time.
Absolutely.
And so, and if you have very specific wishes, you know, and Mark, I want you to answer these things specific, you know, one at a time. The last thing that I want to say is making sure that you implement your letter of intent.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about those things. One, two, three.
Okay.
All right. So let's start with the retirement plans and SECURE Acts.
Okay. So real brief, I hope. since these retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, things like that were invented by Congress in the 1970s, you've always been able to, at your death, leave these plans to anybody, children, you know, strangers, doesn't matter. And they could take out, under the law, they could take out assets or distributions from that plan as slowly as over their life expectancy. If you died and left your plan to a grandchild who was, you know, 1 year old, they could take it out over the next like 85 years, something like that. Why is that important? Because when money comes out of the plan is when it gets taxed. And the longer that you can stretch that out, it's more real after-tax net present value money to the people you love. It's not just delaying the inevitable tax. Pardon me. So the SECURE Act for people dying after 2019, which I presume is most of our listeners, if you die after 2019, in most cases, no, Congress wants its money. It's money. And so everything has to come out of the plan within 10 years after your death. There are exceptions. Surviving spouse, as a couple of others that we're not going to mention. The big one that we want to talk about is if you are leaving a retirement plan to someone who is disabled or chronically ill, we won't get into those definitions, but they can still avail themselves of the life expectancy treatment. So over the beneficiary's life expectancy. That doesn't do a lot of good for a lot of disabled people who may need now or in the future public benefits that are have an asset test to them, you know, a $2,000 asset test like SSI and so on, or who simply are not really good candidates for handling their own money. And so Congress also said, aha, you can leave it to a third party supplemental needs trust, SNT for short, SNT for short, and still get the life expectancy treatment. Great. So now you got this IRA, you got three kids, one of them is disabled. What do? Do you leave it equally? In certain cases, it's better to leave it to the non-disabled children. But in most cases, what we find, it's better to leave it to the SNT for the disabled child. How do you do that? Do you name the SNT directly? Well, now you got all kinds of issues about how do you balance things if you want things to go equally, or even if you didn't want them to go equally, if you wanted it to go, if you wanted the entire estate to go one quarter to each typical child and one half to the disabled child's SNT. How do you do that? If you're not dividing each and every asset equally or proportionally, how do you do that? Our preference in our firm is to name the revocable trust for everything and then have formulas in there that adequately handle this issue. So that's the SECURE Act. Did I cover that sufficiently, Annette?
Yes. Yeah. And so that's a really good lead in to, you know, how we deal with other specific assets too, right? Because a lot of people will want to talk about what's the split between my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, do I do more for my disabled child because they're going to need more over their lifetime? And by the way, I've already sort of set my other kids up for life. I've put them through graduate school. I've paid their down payment for their house. I've done whatever I've done for them. And they're going to be able to be okay. Or I've seen the opposite. I'll be honest, I don't tend to agree with this argument, but this is, you know, no judgment. This is a family who, you know, this is how they feel. But I will have people who come and say, look, my kid's profoundly disabled. The government is taking care of everything. They don't need anything. I don't want that money sitting in a trust that's never going to get used because they don't need anything. I've heard those arguments over and over again. Again, I don't tend to agree with that. And if you've been listening to my podcast for the last almost 4 years, you will know why I don't agree with that, because the government doesn't pay for everything. But so there's that argument, like, how do I split everything? And then, you know, specific assets like a house, Mark, many families will come to us and will have ideas about, I'd like to leave the house or a specific piece of real estate or a certain, you know, thing like, you know, a vehicle or something of meaning to the disabled person or the special needs trust or something like that. And so, you know, not that we need to get into huge detail about it, but, you know, that type of specific asset needs to be addressed in the plan and may need to be retitled at the time that the plan gets done. Meaning, when I say retitled, Mark, what am I saying?
Change the ownership.
Change the ownership. That has to be done in whatever form that takes. If it's real estate, it has to be a deed. If it's something else, you know, we have to make sure that the ownership gets taken care of. It's maybe it's a deed of sale. Maybe it's whatever it is. Okay. We've done a lot of, you know, discussion in these podcasts about all of these topics before. We will do them again in other forms. I don't want to, you know, leave here without emphasizing the importance of letters of intent. As a trustee myself, I am so happy to get some information about the intent of the grantor or the original trust maker, the original creator of the trust, funder of the trust. Typically the parent. Yeah. Knowing what that person wanted, even if I can't always make it happen, is so important. I have had people who have, you know, really just given me some great insight, but I've had the opposite too. I've been in the dark a lot of times and have had to make some really difficult decisions without guidance. And that guidance would have been hugely helpful, hugely. It's great when you have people who will tell you, well, so-and-so would have wanted XYZ. Most of the time, those people have agendas though, and you can't always really rely on what they have to say. If you have a contemporaneous writing where somebody who's doing their plan can say, here are my wishes. I would like this person to stay in their home as long as possible. I would like this person to take 2 vacations every year. I would like you to, you know, prioritize, you know, going to church every week. I would like, whatever the case is, it would be so helpful to know that they would want X to be done with the money or whatever the case may be. So letters of intent, so important. And very few people do them. Very few. Mark, do you have anything to add about that?
Couple of quick things. If we don't have time to get into them, that's okay. At least I want to get it out there. One is that one of the things that we run into a lot is the clients who do their estate plan, and then right away they feel very compelled to start, quote, funding, unquote, like actually transferring assets to the third party special needs trust, supplemental needs trust for their disabled child. Like now, you know, like, wait a minute, you know, you're not dead yet. Generally speaking, not always, but almost always, these are inheritance trusts. They're to be funded when you die or the survivor of you and your spouse die. That's when it gets funded. It's an inheritance trust. Sometimes we'll fund it during life. We're working on a case now where a house is going to be going into that now, not later when the parents die. But there's all kinds of tax issues that also arise, so we won't get into that. The other thing about letters of intent, people say, well, why don't we just put, you know, all the stuff in the trust? Well, one reason is that a lot of this stuff can be things that we don't really want to appear in the trust necessarily, because to the extent that it's in the trust, it can confuse the public benefits agencies. It can cause the public benefits agencies to, or at least some of them are aggressive and maybe want them to do things to the trust that are bad, things like that. The other is, if it's a letter of intent, we view it as a work in progress. Write mm-hmm. something now, add some more to it later, change your mind about a couple of things later. Always keep a fresh, whatever the latest version is, with whoever your successor trustee is for when you die or become incapacitated. You can keep it going and keep it going in an informal way. That's really the better way to handle it. So that's the things I wanted to say about that. And I think I'm done on that.
Those are excellent points. I definitely agree with you. Don't want to confuse you about having to save money and fund your special needs trust now. When we talk about funding the plan, we are mostly talking about funding your top level of your plan, which is usually your revocable living trust, your beneficiary designations, and so forth.
But you're you're not generally giving away any money now to individuals or to irrevocable trusts, things like that.
Right.
Sometimes yes, but generally speaking, you're not.
But as long as you're working with a great team, your circle, you know, and that's going to be your estate planning attorney, your financial advisor, and very often your CPA or your tax planner, you are going to be in good hands. And then you're going to have the best advice, and they're going to let you know when to fund. So that's all you need. You're going to be getting that great advice for you, because not every family is going to follow the same recipe. Okay, so the most important things are, make sure that you're setting good goals, you're getting great documents, but don't forget the last step in making sure that your beneficiary designations, your ownership and retitling are all done, and that you have a great team in place that are helping you connect all those dots, okay? And don't forget that letter of intent. That's really important, and you wanna check that at least once a year and make sure that it's up to date on what all of your goals and plans are for your family. So I think that's all we have to say for today. Thanks for listening, as always. And as I mentioned in my intro, I hope that you're saying a little prayer for my Trixie.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to getting a nice, healthy puppy dog back from the vet, hopefully tomorrow, and we will send some pictures along and let y'all know how she's doing. Thanks for listening. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.